Ian from the United Kingdom, from the UK, asks, my client operates in an extreme all or nothing mode. He imposes a strict regime of diet, exercise, and restraint from alcohol and unhealthy food, and eventually gets tipped into a crash where he's out of control, binging and gambling. He knows that this is unsustainable, but struggles to operate any other way. He probably has ADHD but hasn't been diagnosed. He also shows signs of depression, lacking interest and motivation. We've worked on interventions such as relaxation, having a worry log and dedicated worry time, and some guided visualizations. What else can you suggest?
Thank you, Ian. And it does sound like you're doing some great stuff with a client already. And certainly regular relaxation is incredibly useful when someone has ADHD symptoms potentially, or is certainly all or nothing, black or white, extremist in their thinking, which tends to be that sort of thought tends to be produced by strong emotion. And it's perhaps no wonder that he's showing signs of depression or lacking interest or motivation if he's prone to all or nothing perfectionism and puritanicalism. Because that's a lot of pressure. It's very hard to live up to your own ideals if you have a sort of perfectionistic standard for yourself, then, and you don't meet that invariably, then it can be, we start ruminating about the fact that I'm not getting up at 6 every morning and exercising and doing this and doing that, but I'm sitting on the couch eating Doritos, watching Big Brother. The divide between how I should be and what I am like at the moment is so big that I can start to feel depressed, and then that can demotivate me and so forth. So it might be good to talk to him about how all or nothing thinking manifests, what it is, because quite often it's a revelation for a client when you actually describe that. Would you, people think I'm psychic sometimes, because you just listen to them, and then you I suggest, do you have tendencies to be a bit all or nothing? I think, how did you know? So, well, for the past half an hour, you've been talking in absolutes about everything, completely this or completely that, so you could talk to him about that and how all or nothing thinking tends to trip people up. And it's a sign of progress, I think, when clients start to spot their own all or nothing thinking within themselves. I'm being a bit absolutist about this. I'm not a complete failure. I've had a setback. So they start to become more reasonable. The more emotional, as I said, we get, the more all or nothing we become, which is why someone who wants you to think in extremist ways will seek to whip up your emotions. That's what they have to do. That's the magic button to extremism. So your client has these strict puritanical regimes in which he adheres to for a while, then he kind of flips and crashes back into binging and gambling. And there is a thing about being too puritanical, isn't there? It's often the puritanical ones that have these, sort of skeletons in the cupboard. But we can see puritanical thinking or beliefs as a type of all or nothing thinking as well. So when helping someone overcome a destructive behavior, it's important to separate the behavior from their identity. So instead of calling it an addiction, we might describe it as something outside of them, like a bully, a trickster, something trying to con them from the outside, something outside of themselves. And this isn't to get them to abdicate responsibility, but rather to begin to detach from it so they don't start to feel that it's part of their core identity. When you can detach from something, then it becomes something which isn't really you, and it's easier to stop doing it. So ultimately, we want to separate him from a sense of the behavior, so that he can start to begin to move beyond it. So asking him questions like, how does it trick you to go back to it? When you crash and burn and go back to, it's not a great metaphor, when you go back to the binging or the gambling, what messages does it play you? How does it get you to do that? How does it con you back again? Okay, so you're getting so you want to enhance the rebellious part of a person against the addiction rather than the feeling that the addiction is inherent and within their core sense of being, you know. We can also prepare clients for the rubber band effect. And I actually talk about the rubber band effect as well, you know. So what I mean by that metaphor is the natural pullback toward old behaviors when we're trying diligently, stringently to be good, you know. So when we're trying too hard not to do something we're still compelled to do, then tension builds, you know, because there's this pull back, you know. So the surest way to get a teenage girl to be more attracted to the edgy, bad for her guy is to, you know, deny her seeing him. Then the desire builds. There's the rubber band effect, you know. And in a moment of weakness, we ping back again. If we're trying not to do something, trying not to eat something, trying not to have a cigarette, but we want to, then we're just doing this. And the more you pull this way, the more the tension builds and wants to go that way. And some little bit of release or stressor will have it pinging back even more the other way. And then the person feels weak and pathetic and so on. Really, therapy needs to help take the elasticity out of the rubber band so that there is no tension or compulsion. The person is no longer interested in going back to that toxic person or behavior or whatever it might be, substance. You know, stretching the rubber band too much one way will invariably, as with a puritanical regime, as we probably all tried on occasion, will tend to have this collapsing back the other way, perhaps more extreme than it was before. So one example, one way of attempting to take the elasticity out of that compulsion, that tension, might be, you know, if someone wants to eat healthily, rather than having to eat healthily 100% of the time, we might say, okay, what you need to be doing is going for 75, 80% of the time. Okay, that's what I want you to do. So there's some give built into the attempt at being healthier. That there's some give. It's not stretched too taut, too tight, so that it can ping back too quickly. If that makes sense. You know, when things aren't completely forbidden or forgiven, the tension starts to go out of the rubber. Okay, and I do realize that the word rubber has a different connotation in America. Okay, but you know what I mean. Another way to help our clients take the elasticity and tension out of the pull away from a behavior is to make the behavior itself much less compelling, you know. So when this happens, the client doesn't want to do the behavior. So the tension of not doing it kind of fades away. So the elastic band is the rubber band is broken, you know. So addiction has to do with motivational pathways in the brain, which have to do with dopamine. And as I've said before, dopamine is the motivational chemical which drives us towards a behavior. But also, once we've descended into an addictive trance state, causes amnesia for the downsides of that behavior. It's a really important thing to understand. You know, people think, oh my God, why did I do that again? You know, why did I go and have, you know, sort of 10 gin and tonics again? Or why did I go gambling again? You know, why did I do that again? The reason they did that again was because when they went into that trance state of wanting, fueled by dopamine, the motivational, you know, sort of chemical, then they got dopamine-laced memories of the good things about doing that behavior. But they were entirely out of touch and detached from all the downsides of doing that behavior. Okay. So, you know, that's an interesting thing. So, the chronic drinker or drug taker or porn consumer will, whilst under the sway of the dopamine pathway, only have dopamine-laced memories of feeling good when doing those things. So they're only fed the positive propaganda, so to speak, because of the amnesia produced by the dopamine effect. So using techniques to start to automatically lift people from the addictive trance whenever they go into it and widen their visceral awareness and their cognitive perception can be really useful in bringing them out of addictive trance states when it matters. You know, so you could seek to scramble the pattern so the dopamine-laced amnesia addictive trance state becomes, sort of broken, as it were. So having a client access the feeling of being just about to start binging or gambling, okay, whilst their eyes are closed can be really useful. I did this with a guy who was addicted to gaming machines, and he had a young family, and he regularly gambled away their rent for the month, you know, and food money, and it wasn't good by any means, but he did have a job, so he was bringing in some money, but it was spilling out of him faster than it was coming in, and I had him sort of close his eyes and access the feeling of being about to gamble, you know, and the excitement and the trance-like focus of doing that. Then I had him open his eyes, close his eyes, and access the feeling of having gambled and lost a lot of money, that month's rent. And then I started to attach those two feelings so that one immediately fed into the other. So you see, we're undermining the amnesiac effect of the dopamine-laced memories by doing something like that. Okay. You know, techniques like the tipping point technique, in which the client is asked to pinpoint the point of no return, so to speak, or, you know, as they're about to tip into the addictive pattern, and getting them to relax and suddenly feel outside of it, and just they're watching on from the outside and so forth, so that they can walk away from that, you know, rehearsing those times can be really powerful. So, you know, to summarize all that, you know, externalize the pattern, present the idea of the rubber band analogy so that they know that when they're being too puritanical, it's not good. Now, it's not to say that we shouldn't be puritanical in some ways. You know, if you're allergic to peanuts, then you kind of need to be puritanical about avoiding them. You know, but then you're so attuned, but then the downside is so severe and immediate that you'll tend not to have to resist that very much. It's just something you can't do. Or you can do, but you know the consequences and they're not worth it. But the thing is, you know, you feel like you're going to get away with the consequences with gambling and drinking or eating, you know, bad food and stuff. You know, that's the thing. It's not immediate. If you knew that one go at the roulette wheel kill you instantly, then there wouldn't really be a compulsion to do it, you know, unless you had a death wish. So, but also we can avoid the pressure of never, you know, the thought that I can never do that again. I've given up smoking. I can never do that again. I say to smokers, you know, you don't have to think like that. You know, it's too much pressure. You know, we can frame it as a journey, you know. And even if someone stumbles, that they're still moving forward. You know, if you walk up 100 steps and you stumble down one, you don't have to go all the way back to the bottom again. You know, you still climb those 99 steps and you can get back on the steps again. It's no problem. We don't have to get up every morning thinking, I'm never going to do something. I don't wake up in the morning thinking, I'm never going to mug an old lady. I'm never going to mug old ladies. You know, the reason I don't have to think I'm never going to do this, I'm never, because I'm not involved with that. You know, it's not who I am. You know, maybe I'll have brain damage in 10 years' time and start doing that, but I don't have to think in terms of never. It's just right now, it's a collection of present moments, and I'm not doing it, and it's fine. Okay. So we don't have to think in terms of I can never do this, I can never do that, because that just builds up the rubber band effect. And so there's a few ideas.